I needed to go in a different direction. I needed to do something else. I needed to get out on my own, start my own business and live in a different way. And that's eventually what I did. You know, I quit my job.
Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Daniel Childs could rightfully be called an escape artist. His songs of Life on the Beach and By the Water's Edge capture successfully one's desire to get away from it all. A busy live performer along Florida's Gulf Coast, Daniel released his first album in 2021 and is currently at work on a follow-up. So, Daniel Childs, welcome to Song Creating.
Steve, thank you so much for having me here on Song Creating. I'm really honored.
It's great to have you. So, I have to say, you go by Dan or is it Daniel? You like Daniel?
You know what? I've always gone by Daniel, but you can call me whatever you want.
We'll call you Daniel. That's just fine. All right. So, you need to tell me without, and we won't tell anybody else, but where is your favorite secret beach?
Isn't this a podcast? Indian Rocks, for sure.
Indian Rocks.
Yeah, that's about a mile from my house. And that's just the beach we've always loved.
Is that around Largo or that area?
Yeah, it is. It's right off of Largo. Like from here, I would literally leave, take a left turn, and go down about a mile and hit the bridge. And Indian Rocks is just, it's always been a well-kept secret. I don't know how long it'll be a well-kept secret, but it's really something. And the beach is just amazing there.
Yeah. Well, I've already heard of it. But I have never been there. So you're giving it an endorsement. I'll have to check it out next time we're down there. There's a lot of great beaches. And we're up at Dunedin. We go out to the honeymoon island in the Caladese. And you know, it's that same, it's like you could be just in the middle of nowhere.
Beautiful.
It really is. And there's this old Florida feel to a lot of these places that I think is, you want to go back to Florida like in the 50s and 60s when it was really first getting discovered and not getting spoiled. And there's still those places. You can still find them.
I know what you would love. Have you been to Fort DeSoto?
No.
You would love Fort. If you like, you know, old Florida and even old Florida. And if you like history, yeah. Fort DeSoto is just really, really cool. I mean, yes, there's a campground and everything, but to actually go down and check out the old fort and like my wife, you know, likes to do stuff too. But, you know, I wanted to stop and read the history on every frame and I didn't have time, you know, but the old cannons that they used to use. There were a couple skirmishes from Fort DeSoto, even in Civil War times, huh. I think it was Confederate occupied.
Is this on the Gulf Coast?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's like right off St. Petersburg.
Oh, wow.
Kind of an island right off of Tierra Verde.
Okay. I'll definitely have to check that out. There's a lot down there a lot going on down there too. It's as anybody who's listened has learned, we're kind of new to the Florida scene and it's just every time we're down, we just kind of explore something new. And it's just very cool.
It's really interesting. So
are you finding the music you write has such a nice little, relaxing island sound? Do you tend to write on the beach or do you, you put on some VR goggles and picture the palm trees? How do you get into the mood or is it always there with you?
You know what? I try to keep it ever with me, but like anyone, I sometimes fail to keep it with me, but I try. You know, I ever since moving to Florida, it's been about 8 years since we came down. And I've known people at times who lived, you know, right here in Largo Seminole, but just didn't care about the beach, never went to the beach. And I'm like, how can you live right here in Pinellas County and not go to the beach, man? Like, you know, leave and make room for someone else to come down who will appreciate this place.
Right.
It's amazing. And the thing is, for me, you know, escape and the idea behind the Escape album is that to me, going down to the beach is an escape. During some of the worst emotional and stress-filled times of my life, going down to the beach helped me collect myself and helped me off the ledge.
Where did you move here from?
So my wife and I spent some time in Franklin, Tennessee. And then before that, we were in Seattle.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
You are as far away from Seattle, I think, as you can be in the continental U.S., right?
unless I went to Miami, you know.
Yeah.
But so she's from Seattle. I'm from Tennessee. So we spent some time in Tennessee. Then I initially got a job here, and that's why we came down. But since then, I've quit my job, shall I say.
We'll get into that whole aspect of it in a little bit. So,
oh, man.
You grew up in Tennessee, then in Franklin?
Yeah, well, I was, I'm from Memphis, actually.
Okay.
And then we moved to Franklin when I was in high school. And so
I don't know where Franklin is. Is that like a suburb of it or closer to Nashville? Or
you know what? It's a suburb of Nashville.
Okay.
Actually. And yet another Civil War landmark. It's funny how that came up twice. I'm not a big Civil War junkie, but I do enjoy seeing, the different museums and things in Franklin that you could tour and find out about the history. There's a big battle from the Civil War right there. But these days, Franklin is kind of where a lot of the music business people who work in Nashville will get a home in Williamson County, Franklin, Brentwood. So it's just a nice town.
Were you in the music scene there in Nashville at all or trying to get into it?
I was trying to be, man. Yeah. But, I was the thing is, for one thing, you can't make money playing in Nashville unless you are in one of the bands that plays down in the tourist area of Broadway and Second Avenue. You can't make money there unless you're an actual publishing deal songwriter or a major label artist, and even then sometimes those people are really nickeling and diming to get through. And I was actually at the time, I was actually trying to be a Christian artist. So I was playing a different kind of scene. I was playing the coffee joints and stuff. And I'm like, hey guys, check out my original tunes. It's Christian music that you wouldn't know it was Christian music unless you really dug into the lyrics. Aren't I cool?
Yeah.
This went on for 10 years and eventually I just wasn't getting anywhere. So I got out.
Well, but you had a job in the meantime, though, to make ends meet.
You know what? Back then I was just doing music and just, I was single and
living with your family.
Yeah. Living with my family. Yeah. I did some touring and stuff, some traveling around playing and singing, but I wasn't, paying the bills. I didn't have bills.
Yeah.
I didn't have bills.
It's tough when those damn bills start showing up and you actually got to figure out how to make those work.
Yes.
So 10 years of that. And, were you getting, to keep going at that for 10 years, you must have had some amount of support. I don't mean financial. I mean, emotional fan base. Did that happen or were you really just kept going?
It was really just me. I was seeing a therapist back then. So I think maybe that helped, but now I have you, now I have you, Steve.
You tell me anything, man. I'm listening.
But, this feels like a therapy appointment kind of, so I'm looking forward to this, I also was singing with some gospel groups. Like I'd join the group and travel with them and sing. So, I would make a little bit of a living doing stuff like that. And obviously I had a couple bills, not a lot back then, but, I spent a lot of years just kind of, I was kind of a directionless wanderer. I was a wide-eyed wanderer, just kind of on a sabbatical to try to get somewhere with music. And I thought that, I thought for a while that it was going to be Christian music, but that's just not the road that was laid out for me.
Yeah. I want to touch on your Christian faith. Cause you, on your website, you do, you don't hide it.
Do I?
And, you've got one paragraph, you're thankful. And I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Does that still play a role in your life? But does it still play a role in your music in any way?
It absolutely plays a role in my life, obviously.
Sure. Right.
Musically, I think the one thing that my faith really does in my songwriting is that it helps me keep from going overboard into the negative aspect of life. For instance, quit my job. Like I had drafted lines. And so when I wrote Quit My Job, the song we'll be talking about, I wrote it with my wife to kind of get to have her there with me to keep me from going overboard, because I originally had lines I wanted to write about burning buildings down and this and that. Of course, I was never going to burn down a building. But I think what my faith does, I think it just kind of gives me a frame from which I see everything. And It keeps me from going down roads that I feel wouldn't be right for my convictions. You know.
Interesting. So a lot of folk singers I interview, you know, their songs, they readily admit they do not write a lot of upbeat, happy songs.
Right.
You know, there's Americana folk, you know, it's in country, it's a lot of it is about who left you and, you know, whatever heartbreak that you've gone through. And this island upbeat island music that you write is positive.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think you have to get your head in a different space that way. Now, I'll bet you could write a sad song.
I probably could, but it would validate what's the word I'm looking for? I could write a sad song, but I would feel like I was doing something in contrast to what I am supposed to be doing. I think the music that cheers people up and helps people escape and the island life and being happy, I think that's kind of where I'm supposed to be right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of at the moment at this stage of my life, I'm more of a happy and upbeat kind of person. So that's what gets reflected, you know, and I hope to never be miserable again. I have been before and I hope not to go down that road again. But I guess that's just kind of my place. Like, I do identify with folk music. But if there's any echo of sadness in my songs, it's more of a sadness of missing a really good time. And I'm writing about the good time because I'm under stress. You know what I mean?
The FOMO song.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right. And you play live a lot around the Gulf Coast as well. And I mean, what's the atmosphere that you want to perform in? Is an upbeat party type atmosphere, or at least you can hear wonderful, amazing songwriters who are writing these songs that you just have to, you know, they bring tears to your eyes and this kind of thing, which is great. You know, if that's what they're trying to do, and people can relate to that. And you know, obviously we want people to relate to our songs, whatever they are, but there's happy, you know, you want to exude that happiness and let it be contagious.
Absolutely. Right? And it can be hard. It can be hard sometimes because you never know with a crowd, you never know what the scenario of the evening is going to be. So sometimes the scenario of the evening is people are talking, it's a restaurant vibe. And I realize, okay, well, at least for the first couple hours, I'm just kind of background music for the setting of these people's life tonight. So I accept that and try to do that. But obviously I think what you want is you want people to be engaged. You want people to be having fun, clapping, singing along, or at least listening and showing, you know, applause and support for what you do. But you just don't always get that. There are times that maybe, you know, people aren't in a good mood, you know, but I'd say more often you're there and you enhance the environment, bring people out of their shell, get people moving around a little bit, get people drinking. And so I'd say 8 times out of 10, it works. Other times it's like, okay, well, let me find some other purpose in what I'm doing right now, you know?
Huh. I want to go back to your upbringing now. And before you started delving into the Nashville scene, were you, a high school choral kid playing guitar? What was your thing?
I was the high school reject, you know, I was, you know, and I think the fact that I played guitar and that I had a guitar and that at school once a week, I had my guitar with me. I think that's what got me friends. Because I think before I started playing music or, you know, around school and stuff, I was kind of just one of those more invisible kind of people. I found it very difficult to, back then, I found it very difficult to be social and to make friends. I didn't know how. And then once I started, you know, bringing my guitar to school and playing in some of the talent shows and singing at some school events, you know, just by myself, I think that's when I started to make friends. And I started to see that music, you know, for me was kind of my vessel for a lot of things, not just for self-expression, not just for a pastime, but it was the way that I connected with people, you know, in those early years. But I was never really in a chorus or, you know, marching band. I didn't really get involved. I didn't have good grades. I was really just kind of a reject kind of guy. But
so the guitar you brought to school, was it an acoustic guitar or were you getting into metal?
It was a black Takamine acoustic. And I played that guitar forever. I mean, that was the one I always had. And now I've got a newer black Takamine, you know, but yeah.
I was wondering if you were one of the, you know, I picture the high school kids that are, you know, what do they call them? They're like the under the stairs kids or the ones that just hang out. They find that corner. But
but
actually what they're listening to is the serious heavy metal, you know, shredder kind of music. But it sounds like that wasn't your thing.
No, you know what? In my day, it was the more the singer-songwriters who were out at the time.
Even then.
And some of the rock, you know, some of the rock bands, you know, back in the 90s. But, you know, 90s rock was not, you know, what this stuff is today. It was more of a melodic, poppy kind of vibe. So I
a little bit like the Toad the Wet Sprocket kind of thing. Gin Blossoms.
Sort of stuff. Yep, exactly. Another big one for me was Matchbox 20. Mm-hmm. Rob Thomas, the way he sings was super influential.
Oh, sure. You know, it's great music and it's very guitar oriented and it's more organic.
Musicians were musicians. Guitar players knew how to play guitar. They knew more than one trick, you know? And
were you involved in youth group and playing music in the youth group as well at that time?
I totally was, man. I totally was. In fact,
let me guess. Yeah. Hold on. Morning is Broken.
Oh, wow. I've never played Morning
is
Broken.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I may be dating myself because that was a serious youth group song for me all the time.
Morning is Broken.
Keep going. That's an old Cat Stevens tune.
Oh, is it really?
Actually, I think it's a traditional song, but he made it famous.
Yeah, I'm familiar. There's like a piano solo version that I've heard quite a bit. But you know what? I think I was 15. I just threw together a rock band to do youth group stuff. You know, we did.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And we did whatever the popular, you know, praise and worship songs were.
Yep.
But we kind of amped it up a little bit. That's when bands were still the thing, you know, like for the youth to come in and see a band playing. Like that was the thing. Now it's like, you want the youth to come in and see a DJ or I don't even know.
Oh no, really?
I don't even know. Man. Everything's so different. It's all this electronic stuff, you know, with people now.
Wow. Well, back in my youth group days, we didn't even have bands. I mean, it was like you showed up with your acoustic guitar and everybody sat around a circle and, you know, you just communed to Kumbaya and, you know, went on from there. But it was we never had any kind of praise band or anything like that. I know they existed, but, it was just not something that we got into. We just played songs.
That's the way to do it.
To your point though, about it's your way to communicate and make friends. It absolutely is. It just opens up so many opportunities.
Absolutely.
To the shy kid.
It really does.
So you don't come across to me like a quiet introverted guy. I think you've grown out of that.
I am. This is bad. I'm a textbook extrovert. And I think, you know, the best definition of introverts and extrovert is like how a person gets their energy, and an introvert gets energy from being alone, being quiet, being at home. Well, I'm sluggish and sleepy and lethargic at home, but I wake up at night when I go to the bars. And that's where I get my energy. That's where I get the strength to play is being around people and being in the middle of the scene. Weirdest turnaround in the world. Because, you know, like you said, when I was younger, I wasn't like that.
Yeah. But, well, you must have, I mean, were you crying to get out? Did you know that there was somebody inside you that just really wanted to just be, you know, loud and fun? And you, but you, because you had that high school, it's almost like, I know we end up in high school, kids have a reputation, you know, it's almost like the, whatever you enter high school with is the, you know, how everyone's going to pursue you for the rest of your high school career, unless, you know, something really happens differently. But
right.
Did you feel stifled because of that? Or was this really kind of your own choice to be that way?
I think it was my own choice, just because I think I was just a little scared. I think I was a little afraid, you know, to let myself be whoever I felt like I was.
A particular event that you can think of, or something that all of a sudden it just
now
it just
that's happened. Interesting. I would have to really think about that.
Yeah. Maybe it was just a gradual thing.
I think it probably was. I think it would have been more of a gradual thing, because I can't really think of anything that would have, flipped a switch like that. But that is that interesting.
Maybe just somebody coming up to you and saying, "Hey, man, you know, it just doesn't take much to flip that switch."
It's weird.
That's interesting. Okay, so let's see. You got married, moved to Seattle, right?
Yep.
Okay. And then something brought you to Southern Florida. That was a job opportunity?
It was a job opportunity. We had relocated to Franklin, and we were just kind of dead in the water. We had originally wanted to get a ministry off the ground, just a traveling music ministry, and we did get it off the ground. But we didn't do well enough to financially stay afloat. And so I just started applying for different music director kind of jobs. And next thing I knew, I, you know, was in Clearwater on an interview, you know. And so I actually had a few different jobs over the course here. The first one was at a church, music director position at a church. And then from then I moved on and started some other music director type positions, or directing a music program, you know, at this and that place. But the interesting part about it was I found with music director positions that it really is more of kind of a desk job. There's not really any glamour to it. So these guys that, you know, direct a music program, whether it's at a church or at a school or at a theater, it's you're really just sending emails and organizing things, and music takes up such a small fraction of a job like that. Oh yeah. So I got kind of down sometimes.
So that give and take that you get with the kids is a small part of it. Then you're dealing with administration and everything else.
Oh yeah. And there's administrations everywhere, you know, in any kind of job. And so for me, I just think the 9-to-5 kind of lifestyle didn't click with whatever it is that I am, you know?
Yeah.
And I found myself, just kind of stressed out. I found myself not able to cope very well and constantly fantasizing of just quitting my job.
Yeah. Plus all your musical energies are driven that way.
Yeah.
And not inwardly, not to your own enjoyment. I imagine you can only have to handle so much of it.
It's the musical aspect of it, and the passion you have for what you're doing can very easily get drowned out by, you know, the 9-to-5 schedule and the other responsibilities. And I think when you get to that place, when you get to a place of complete burnout, something needs to change, because you've got a limited, you know, amount of time that you could go on that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it could be anything that needs to change. But for me, I needed to go in a different direction. I needed to do something else. I needed to get out on my own, start my own business and live in a different way. And that's eventually what I did. You know, I quit my job. We'll be right back.
rolling chair ain't gonna wheel me away from here. And this office space is just a prison where I waste away. And my paycheck stub didn't even pay the rent this month. And for 13 hours overtime, they didn't even throw an extra dime. And there's not so much as a thank you. So I've got an idea to make them grateful for all the extra things I do. I think I'm gonna quit my job. Without a word, just get up and walk off. Hit the interstate and disappear to any place that's far away from here. I know my boss is gonna throw a big fit tomorrow when I just don't come in. 'Cause it's gonna hit them hard when they realize what they lost when I quit my job. To whom this note may concern, I think I've learned all here that I can learn. I wanna say I'm glad that we crossed paths, but my lips are far too tired from kissing your ass. I think it's best now if we just part ways. I've wasted 4 long years and 76 days, and the labor isn't worth the pay, carrying the boss's extra weight. Oh, I think that's all I'm gonna write. While I'm sitting with my feet in the sand somewhere far away tonight, I think I'm gonna quit my job. Crank the engine of my beat-up Dodge, drive toward the south until I see palm trees fall off the radar for a couple of weeks. They're gonna wonder where they took a wrong turn when there's nobody there to do the hard work. It's just the natural result of treating a good guy wrong when I quit my job. Office on my way out of town, with my beach clothes on and the radio up and my windows all rolled down. I think I'm gonna quit my job, turn my cell phone off, hit the pedal of my Durango, see how far a tank of gas can go. By the time they read my last email, I may be further than Fort Lauderdale. And I'm gonna reclaim all the time which I've been wrong when I quit my job. Bye 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 bye. When I quit my job.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here with Daniel Childs.
Thanks for having me.
From South Florida. So, Daniel, give us, we've gone through the psychological evaluation and your psychological evaluation. And I think a lot of listeners have been in that place where you want to say heck with it. And then the song is great because it really just it can be interpreted however you want to your own job. But tell us a little bit about how this all came about. And we know what inspired it, I think, but let's hear a little bit about the development of it.
So writing songs was my escape. When I was working, you know, various jobs, various 9-to-5, you know, kind of jobs, writing songs was my escape because sometimes I had a tendency that I would just really get stressed out and I would have trouble getting away from the stress. I could go home, you know, after a day of work and still be stressed out and still focused on work. And so I started taking my wife, Norma, and leaving town on some of the weekends. And we would go to different villages and different towns around Florida, beach towns, you know, and we'd spend a weekend somewhere else. And that's how I began to find some solace, is to quite literally get away from my worries. And when I would come home and come back to work, I would, you know, I'd be in the midst of feeling stressed and feeling unhappy with, you know, the direction I was headed career-wise, and I would pull out my guitar, sometimes even on the clock. I would pull out my guitar and I would sing and I would write songs. And I wrote songs about those weekend getaways, you know, with my wife. And some of those songs that I wrote during that time period actually made my album release, you know, last year. But Quit My Job, I actually started drafting Quit My Job while I still had a job, because I thought, how many other people in the world feel like they want to quit their job and just go to the beach, move to the beach, do something else, be their own boss, be their own manager. And so I started writing Quit My Job back then before I ever even quit. And so fast forward to, you know, 2020, 2021, putting an album together. I pulled that one back out, you know, of the folder. And
how many years are we talking
about? One or two years.
Okay.
Pulled it back out of the folder, had my wife with me to keep me from, you know, writing anything insulting or negative, you know, about my past experiences. And so she's a co-writer on it, but yeah, pulled it out, wrote it, and thought, you know, this would be such a great addition to this project, because it's kind of a commodity, or I don't know what the word would be, but it's, you know, it's kind of got that country sound, like that rebel country sound to it, but it's also kind of got that island vibe to it. And so making a project that was more of an island kind of project, it really fit in with the mentality of pursuing the beach life. And, you know, if I fast forward to now, some of the hotels and resorts and restaurants that I play at are heavily tourist impacted. And I've had so many people tell me about how Quit My Job. They want to hear it. They want me to play it, you know, and playing it. I mean, I like playing my other songs better because, you know, Quit My Job is a fun song and I love fun songs, but you want to play your serious song, you know, but people want to hear it. I've had people tell me that the song helped them find the courage to quit their job.
Wow.
Like people have literally quit their jobs.
You know, you're doing more with this song than you did with your ministry.
I know.
You're changing lives.
I know, right? Like I probably, who knows what even.
Not to diminish what your ministry did. I'm not really sure.
I don't know either.
But I think you have a ministry. It's just a different ministry than you actually set
out. It's a different kind of ministry. It's not a ministry of preaching and prayer and things like that. It's a ministry of
hope.
Of hope. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Man, that nails it. That nails it. Giving people hope.
So,
relief.
Yeah. So how did you, in the process of this, you'd written it, you pulled it back out, you made changes on it. What's your rewriting and your involvement normally? How do you process all of that?
So for me, making the changes and the revisions on Quit My Job was, I think, when I had originally started writing it, I was in kind of a bad place mentally. And because of that, I had written some pretty negative, you know, lyrics. So on that one, it was trying to make the song more positive, trying to make it a happy quit my job song. Like, look at all this hope I have in quitting my job. So in that one, it was sprucing it up and making it happier. But then other things, you know, will be just kind of assessing lyrics, assessing rhymes, assessing melodies. Is this a melody someone wants to sing along with, or the rhymes? I heard a songwriter one time, one of my favorite songwriters, said, never go for the easy rhyme. And that changed my life. That utterly changed it, because if you listen to some older music, you can hear how, you know, people didn't really think out the lyrics, you know, in former decades. And so you hear a lot of easy rhymes. So I think, okay, so if something's the obvious rhyme and it's easy, then I need to think harder and find a different rhyme, you know?
Interesting. As I look at your lyrics here, I'm finding that you don't have a repeating chorus.
Isn't that weird?
Well, I don't know if it's weird. You know, I find I kind of do that myself sometimes. And because you have so much to say.
Yes.
Right? And I think you have a lot to say here. Obviously, there's a lot of lyrics here. There's a whole story to tell.
There is.
I mean, you come back to the chorus. I think you start with, I think I'm going to quit my job. But then the remainder of that is something else.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think it was just a couple of days ago, or I was working on doing some writing, working on writing a song. And I found that when I write, I have to combat the tendency to change the lyrics each time I do a chorus. And so like it works sometimes, but sometimes you just need the same chorus that you can repeat over and over and over. But my songs, a lot of them have the tendency to keep the structure of the chorus, but change a few lines in each chorus. I just have this weird tendency to do that. And I try to combat it, because I think, well, if somebody's going to be singing along, then they want to know the words and not have to memorize all these different choruses.
Exactly. Yeah. I've found the same thing. There's a benefit to having the same catchy chorus.
There is.
You know, same four lines. People eventually, you know, will sing along with it.
With this song, there was too much to say, you know?
Well, there is, you know, and that's part of the story that you're telling, is there's a lot of, you know, the whole, I mean, you're looking at this from so many perspectives, from being at the job to, escaping the job and then looking back on the old job and, you know, waving off, you know, the everything about your past. So you've really, it's like a good writer, novel writer will see things from different angles.
You know?
Almost like on a television program or a movie, where, you know, you're not always looking from the angle of the protagonist. You've got to see things, you know, you've got different camera angles, because people need to see things from different perspectives. And that's kind of what you got going here. They're going to wonder where they took a wrong turn when there's nobody there to do the hard work. Now you're at the perspective of your coworkers. I mean, it's great. There's just so much there. But
oh man,
I don't think, let's see, you don't really specifically say what you did here. And it's so, and I was actually surprised to hear that. I don't know why I was surprised to hear, but that you were a music director. I thought, you know, you worked in some high tech firm, or, you know, you were in the grind, you know, it was a middle management job, you know, something that, just had no creative anything going on, which I guess it ended up being what your music director roles were like. You lost all the creativity and it was just all administration.
Yeah. I think, you know, and I think the idea that I was going for there is, you know, at the end of the day, if it's not what you're really passionate about and the thing you want to do for work that has meaning to you, then at that point, all jobs are the same. So I wanted anyone to be able to relate to this song, you know, that it could apply to any type of job.
So Daniel, what would be, what was one of those dark lyrics that your wife Norma just convinced you couldn't keep in there?
You know, I think at one point I had written a lyric that I was going to escape to Mexico. And, you know, I said I was going to hightail down the interstate and make a new home in Cozumel or something of that nature. And I started to go in a direction that was conceptually impossible.
Ah,
you know, okay. No one who's working a job in modern day United States of America is actually going to drive to another country and, you know, disappear off the radar. It was all about falling off the radar and completely disappearing from everyone. So I think I took those lyrics out. So,
yeah. So it wasn't so much dark. It was just the conceptual or the continuity aspect of it.
Right.
I guess the reality of it. Cause everything else in the song is totally real.
Tangibility, you know?
Yeah. So what do you got coming up?
I don't know. What do I have?
You got another CD you're working on, right?
Indeed I do.
Doesn't everybody?
I hope we do.
Isn't that, you get that first CD out and of course you're starting to work on your second one. You're never really sure how far into it you are, but
I hope you're working on one.
Horizon. Yeah.
Are you?
Wait, I'm sorry. Am I?
I hope you are.
Oh, of course.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not be as a creative? You know, I think something people don't understand about musicians and creatives in general. And this is big because this can, I think if people understood this, or it's kind of a dual concept, but I think if people understood this, I think people would view musicians differently, would view songwriters differently. And it's this, number one, when you're working on your craft, you're literally pouring out your heart and soul. And that's even if you're singing cover music in a bar, you're pouring everything out. There's emotions involved in what you're singing and what you're playing and what you're feeling. And then the other side of that being creatives have a hyper sense of creative energy, and you have to be using that creative energy. You have to be working on your craft. You have to be working on new music or new art. And if you're not, you start to lose it. You start to just lose your mind and you start to really struggle with a discontentment and a feeling of not all is right in the world. And so it can be really hard to balance that schedule. But I think if people understood the passion and the emotion that goes into giving a performance, I think everyone out there would respect performances a little more and show a little more support of, you know, people who are immersed in the arts. And likewise, I think if people understood a creative person's hyper sense of creativity and that need, that genuine need to be working on your craft, I think people would understand why, you know, maybe sometimes we're not available to do this and that social activity because we have to make so many moments, so much time, you know, to be doing what we do. And so for me, it's like, I am so busy. I'm playing 5 shows this week and, you know, officiating a memorial service, this and that, getting the house ready for Christmas. But somehow in there, I have to get in time to be writing songs and working on my next project. And so often that ends up being 1 a.m. or 3 a.m., but it has to be done. It has to be done. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine living a life of not producing music, of not churning it out. So there will definitely be another album. I've been praying about it and I feel like I've got a green light to make one. And so I want it to be from the same vein of thought. I want it to be from the same idea of escaping, finding relief, finding freedom from your distress, because that's what music has given me, you know, in my life. I don't know musically if it'll be the same or maybe more relaxation focused. I don't even know, but I'm working on it and maybe I won't know till I get a few songs in, you know?
Yeah.
But,
I think you alluded to a phrase that, I'm sure didn't originate here, but we've talked about with on the podcast, creators just need to create.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to do it. I think accountants need to account.
Yeah.
Salesmen need to sell. You know, athletes need to run. You know, you just it's just in you. You just have to do it. And you're right. It's just something that you can't not do.
And I think that goes back to the dawn of creation, if you think about it. I mean, if you believe in a higher power, if you believe that there is a creator who created everything, then there are the biblical account, you know, that God spent 6 days creating. And then on the seventh day, he rested from his creating. So if you believe in that account, it's like, okay, I could create 6 days of the week. I need to take a break, one of them, you know, and restore my energy to do some more creating. But if you believe in a higher power and in an ultimate creator of things, then it's not a foreign idea that maybe creation, being creative, and the desire to create could be embedded within the fiber of our being as people.
You know, I have never thought of this, that aspect, kind of conflating us as creators to the creator.
Yeah.
And I have to say, this is probably the first time we've even spoken about religion on this podcast.
Oh no.
But it is like creating is like, it's not something that came next.
Right.
Creating is what came first.
In the day of rest.
Yeah. No, I mean, in the whole concept of the whole world.
Right.
There was something was created.
Yeah.
We're creating, you know, we're still, it's a continuation of the, of creating, you know, God didn't come up and, do any accounting or selling.
Right.
You know, he created it. It's just, you know, what are we doing? We're continuing the work of God,
in a way,
whatever form you want to call it. I'm always thrilled when I come up with something new.
Oh yeah.
It's great. And as with all of us, who are on this and write songs or write books or whatever, you know, there's just always so many different ways to do it. So one thing I before we go, I wanted to ask you, I asked you about your influences, and it dawned on me, I think I was expecting to hear, Jimmy Buffett, Kenny Chesney, Zach, you know, they didn't pop into your head here. Did that Jack Johnson, you know, did that kind of music appeal to you?
You know what? It did. And I think that my influences are so broad, because I have to think, because we spoke earlier, you know, about some of the 90s rock artists, you know, that influenced me in my high school days. Since then, I've gone through these time periods of I've gotten into like every kind of music there is. And John Mayer, you know, was a big one from in the acoustic realm. You know, he was a very big one. Who do I even listen to now? Sean Colvin.
Oh, sure.
I mean, and honestly, I've always liked her voice, but Sean Colvin, lately, I have been getting into her records like never before. And her melodies, her lyrics, her guitar voicings, what an amazing artist. And then everyone like her under the sun, everyone who is that kind of singer-songwriter that just from what they play to what they write to what they sing is beautiful, you know. But and then if you were to go back to, you know, what originally got me to pick up the guitar in the first place, Elvis Presley was big for me.
Really?
Oh yeah. Elvis Presley was big. My dad was a musician, still is.
I see. So you had that influence.
Oh yeah.
Like Led Zeppelin is something my daughters talk about because they had my influence.
Cause you were listening to Led Zeppelin. I mean,
yeah, of course.
I think your dad, you know, if you have a relationship with your dad, I think whatever your dad is into will always, you know, kind of determine your musical interest.
Absolutely.
So Elvis, BJ Thomas, Billy Joel,
sure.
Big one. So, I mean, it's the palette is really broad for me, you know. So like the 90s rock acts, I think they were the ones for me who like really, you know, hit the nail on the head with the hammer, but a lot of people put the nail there and held the hammer. You know what I mean? It's really broad. And I'd have to say I'm a lover and appreciator of any type of music that is an art form and that produces something that's inspiring or that produces something that's a beautiful sound to listen to. I'm a fan, you know. I'm a big Steve Robb fan, you know.
I haven't even sent you anything yet.
But I already am.
You will be. You'll become one.
I would love to.
That means I may have one fan. I'm really excited.
I will like you on Facebook.
Oh, super. All right. Well, Daniel Childs, thanks, man. This has been fun. I've really enjoyed this.
I have too.
And I hope we connect when I'm down in Florida, wherever it may be.
Come on down.
I'll keep an eye on your schedule and definitely say hi.
Come see me somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. People can learn about Dan's schedule and all about him at danielchildsmusic.com. And that's Childs plural. Even though he may be a child still, it is danielchildsmusic.com. I'm saying that in jest, of course. danielchildsmusic.com, and he's got all kinds of info. And it's a great album. It's got a wonderful sound, beautifully produced.
Thank you.
I mean, and you play a lot of instruments on this as well.
Yes, I did 100%. I had a friend do some string sections for me, but literally this room that I'm sitting in right now, I produced everything in this room, played all the guitars, basses, and programmed the drums. It's not, I didn't have the ability to track a drummer. So, you know, I programmed the drums, but, I didn't have any money. I didn't have any resources other than just the equipment that I have. And I'm very pleased. It's almost miraculous, like, that somehow I just produced an album. Bam, there it is. I don't know how I did it.
Well, I'll tell you, you got instrumental chops. You got a voice like from the heavens. I mean, you got a fantastic voice. It's beautiful. What are you, a tenor, obviously, but are you actually higher than a tenor?
You know what? I was a tenor. And actually, back in my gospel singing days, at first I was a tenor, but they want you to sing really high. I was hitting high C's and, you know, G's above high C's. But the problem therein is that I burned out my voice. And so ever since then, I've been more of a lead. I can sing kind of a high lead, just, you know, or what they would call a second tenor, I guess. And then I can sing more baritone ranges as well. But I don't.
Wow, I thought you were higher than a tenor, but I guess I'm not that.
I wish I was
knowledgeable in the actual range. And
that would have been cool.
Yeah. Anyway, you got a great voice, and I know that carries you well. You know, you've got a real presence.
I try to jump around.
Yeah, it's great. I'm really looking forward to seeing you. And you can see your pictures of you in action. Looks like you have a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, man. I do, you know, and I try to convey that through social media. You know, if I have a social media presence and a website presence, I try to convey, you know, through pictures and videos that we really have a good time at my shows. Those nights when people just want to cut loose and have fun, which is most of the time, you know, I think we really have a great time, and we sing and we dance, and it's just an acoustic guitar and a voice, but people dance, and you know, we have a great time. Looking forward to more.
South Florida, man. It's Partyville.
Absolutely it is.
All right. Daniel, thank you so much.
God bless you, Steve. Right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Okay, you bet.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.